ESPN's Warren McCoy.
Wow.
His passion is football. ESPN radio host Warren McCoy, former player, agent, coach, scout. You know, he's done it all. And in talking to him, I can't believe how passionate he is, not only about football, but about the CFL. He should be calling in any time now. I believe he knows the show starts at 10. If not, we'll remind him, because that's what we need to do. Now, this week, we've got a couple of interesting football games. I guess the one that I think is a marquee matchup only because last year the Grey Cup was played in Toronto, and this week it'll be played in Saskatchewan, and that's a good thing. Saskatchewan is 2-0. And they're coming into the Rogers Centre tomorrow, in fact, to play the Argonauts. And I guess try to establish their superiority within the league against the Argonauts, the first game this week. And next matchup is Calgary against Montreal. We'll talk further about these. Calgary is playing the way Calgary can play. Like the rest of the teams, except for Hamilton, they are 1-1. The Ticats are the reverse, the mirror image of Saskatchewan at no wins and two losses. But let's stick with the Calgary-Montreal game. Montreal, wow. Watching the games, I don't think I've ever seen Calvillo as wearing his emotions on his sleeve as much as he has early on in this season. To be frustrated, or at least to appear to be frustrated this early in the season, cannot be a good sign. You know, the Montreal Alouettes obviously have a lot of pressure on them. Calvillo noted that it's the first time he's ever played for a team where a new coach leaves when things are going really well. Normally, coaches leave because they're unsuccessful. But in the case of Montreal, they lost a coach because he was too successful and ended up in the NFL with the Chicago Bears, as you all are aware. Now, that game, I'll give you who I think is going to win a little after we go through all this. Now, we've got the Winnipeg Blue Bombers that were a team. Buck Pierce, well, he must be half a buck by now because he's like lost a lot of weight. Some of the consensus suggests that Buck should put some weight back on. I kind of disagree. I've watched him play. He doesn't appear susceptible to heavy hits because of less weight. And I think mostly because he's more mobile. You know, as has been said in some of the broadcasts, one of the biggest problems with Buck, he's very competitive. And by that I mean, you know, instead of, you know, sliding into a tackle, a hook slide, which automatically is him saying, I'm down, don't hurt me. Whereas he tended to go head first, which means the ball's still live, and I'm intending to get as far as I can with the ball and gain as much yardage as I can, so stop me. Well, you know, he's had some opposition players who've advised him that may be ill-advised, that decision. So yeah, the future will tell what Buck Pierce will be able to handle, whether the loss of weight is an issue for him being hit and not being able to take the kind of hits that a quarterback takes. But between you and I, there's the old axiom in the CFL is that without a quarterback, you can't win. Well, I'm going to add a little qualifier. If you don't protect the quarterback, it doesn't matter how good he is. So in that sense, if Buck Pierce is protected by the Winnipeg Blue Bomber front line and the offense that's there to protect him, whether it be the fullback, the running back, or, you know, whatever, tight end, whatever. They've got to be there to protect him. And that's really the key to him being healthy. Now, I can see after watching Montreal play a couple of times, the health of Calvillo could be, well, it could take a nosedive just because he's not getting the kind of protection that he is accustomed to. So the Blue Bombers are playing the Ticats. The Bombers split with Montreal. The Ticats lost to the Argos and then lost again to Edmonton. More about Edmonton later. I owe some apologies to Edmonton football fans who feel I said that Edmonton was a team that was going to have a difficult time in the Western Division. So the Ticats will be playing the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, the Bombers who I think are playing very well. And the most important thing that they're doing well is their defense is outstanding. And they're getting some sacks. And sacks mean that the quarterback is under pressure. And if the quarterback's under pressure, he's not making great passes. And the receptions aren't there. And, you know, don't give a quarterback time to throw. And that quarterback is inefficient. And that happened to Calvillo. Now, this week, they're going to play a different team for the first time because they played already two games against Montreal. They'll be playing Hamilton. On the same token and the same observation I made of the Hamilton, two key personalities within the Hamilton franchise have to be Burris and Austin. And I don't think my Hamilton friend fans will be upset with me saying this because I think they probably noticed it as well. Austin is very upset. He seems passionately angry and frustrated, as does Burris. Ever since that reception at the end of the game against Toronto didn't happen that he thought would happen, you can tell he wants things to go well, and he's got to really let things happen. And I hope the Hamilton team, the organization itself, rally around these two guys because these are two very good people. I don't think anybody could say anything really terrible about Austin. Ken Austin is a good man. And as Burris is a fine individual. So I hope that they can work things out. Hamilton's a team that, you know, deserves a break this year only because they don't have a home. And that's got to be tough, too. We've talked about it here on our Argo night that, you know, the Toronto Argos don't really have a home field. They're basically visitors all the time. It's just that they visit the Rogers Center more than they do the other stadiums that they visit. And by that, I mean they don't practice there. They might throw the ball around before the game, but that's pretty much it. They might kick the ball around a little bit. That's pretty much it. So, you know, it's not really a home field per se. And in that sense, it not being a home field, makes it difficult for one to, feel like they're at home. So the Argos are up against, as I said, Saskatchewan. I think Toronto is going to be in tough in that game. Saskatchewan seems on fire. The Calgary Stampeders, I think, will take Montreal. And the Bombers, unfortunately, will make the Hamilton Tigercats 0-3. The real tough one to call is going to be Edmonton and BC. BC looked good against the Argos on the weekend, or I should say on Thursday. But Edmonton they're picking up whatever the coach is feeding them. They're picking up pretty good. And that front line, although it's not experienced, they've done a great job. Now, joining us is Warren McCoy of ESPN Radio. Warren, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you doing, Frank?
Good, my man. Well, I had a chance to look into your life. This is your life. I'm impressed. We talked on the phone for a little while, and I mentioned that you don't seem like the type of person that moss grows under your feet very much.
True.
Let's have fun with who you are and where you come from. You're a Texas guy, right?
Yeah, born and raised in West Texas, Amarillo.
Now, Amarillo is a pretty warm place, isn't it?
It's hot during the summers, but we get all four seasons down in the Texas Panhandle. We get blizzards. You know, you're basically 2.5 hours from the southern part of the Rocky Mountains. So we get snow, we get rain, we get heat. Falls are nice. Fall time is nice, though.
Oh, okay. That sounds a lot like here.
Very much so, just without the humidity.
Or the armadillos.
Without that Ontario humidity. Yep.
Or the armadillos.
No armadillos where you guys are at, no doubt about that. Or longhorn steers, for that matter.
Or longhorn steers, exactly. Or oil rigs. No.
Exactly.
Well, we have them in the Calgary area, which you know pretty well. So
for sure.
You started playing football as a youth, I guess?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Fourth grade.
And you went to college, I guess. Which college did you go to?
I went and played at Southwest Oklahoma State, Division II school in Weatherford, Oklahoma. And then from there, suffered a career-ending injury my freshman year, and that kind of shut football down from a playing perspective. And then it was time to reevaluate life suddenly as a young man and figure out what I wanted to do. And I always knew I wanted to stay involved with football and found a way to get that done.
And you did. And so now you start, I guess you kind of had a plan, and then your plan got interrupted by people's suggestions, right?
Yeah. So I knew I wanted to coach. But my fiance, who's still my wife at the time, she was my high school sweetheart. She didn't want to do the small town Texas thing that high school coaches have to do. In Texas, high school coaches are paid very well. Many of them make six-figure salaries. But you kind of have to pay your dues. You have to start out in the small towns, prove that you can be successful before you move up to the bigger size schools and the bigger cities. So I tried my hand in corporate America. Meanwhile, was doing some journalism, writing, and wrote a story on a player who'd played at West Texas State back in the day that was a legend up in Canada by the name of Alondra Johnson, AJ, as he's affectionately known by Stampeder fans. And, did a story on him, kind of hit it off. And when he had his last contract come up with Calgary, he felt like he needed representation and asked me to step in. Of course, Frank, I was young and dumb. I didn't know anything about the agent business, but went through the proper channels with the CFLPA, got licensed, and to make a long story short, took care of that contract for AJ and started representing other CFL players, and then that gradually led to me representing coaches. And I've kind of continued to do that throughout my career, but, basically representing coaches suddenly became a lot of X's and O's discussions. And before I knew it, I had CFL teams and Arena League teams contacting me to do some scouting, write personnel reports on players, and offer an unbiased, kind of a third set of eyes opinion on players. So I started doing that and did very well with that, developed some great relationships up in the CFL. And that eventually led to jobs with the Kansas City Chiefs and the Green Bay Packers. And then Reader's Digest version, I ended up having a chance to sit on the Arena Football League Board of Directors and coached and was a general manager in the Arena League for 5 years. And then 2008, went to work with ESPN.
And
I've worn many hats. I guess that's the best way to put it.
Well, you're quite the haberdasher for sure.
Indeed.
Now, it isn't a straight line that you've drawn. It is a real zigzag.
Yes,
and
very much so.
The game of football is your passion. You refer to it as your passion. It must be your passion because you have not left any stone unturned. Now, you're also a fella that understands the game, like you said, the X's and O's, and now you find yourself on ESPN. How much do you think it helps to have all these diverse lives in football to be a broadcaster? And do you think you can still maintain a connection with the fans, knowing being so deeply, I don't want to say complicated, but knowing so much about football? Are you worried that sometimes you might talk differently than maybe a fan might hear or understand?
Well, what I've tried to do over the last 5 years and what I think has really made the show successful here in the States is I bring an insider's perspective from someone who played, who coached, who scouted, who was in management, who handled press releases. I've worn just about every hat possible, so I understand what that world is like. But I've also never forgotten my roots, which are just being a fan of football. I started watching football when I was 7 years old. I still remember the first NFL game I ever watched. And I think, I bring that to the table so that my listeners understand that, I'm a fan, but I also am able to separate fact from fiction. And in the sports talk business, I'm sure it's the same in Canada as it is here in the States. There are a lot of loudmouth blowhards who say a lot of things with conviction, but really don't know what the hell they're talking about because they've never walked a day in the shoes of a general manager, of a quarterback, of a scout, of a general manager. I cringe during the NFL draft time, and I'm sure it's probably starting to become that way in Canada with the increased coverage of the CFL draft, but there are suddenly thousands of draft experts, Frank, that have never played a snap of football in their life, have never known what it's like to sit down and break down actual film on a player, to ask the right questions, to know what a player is made of. But yet suddenly they're experts because they have a blog. So I try to do my best on my show to separate fact from fiction, but also at the same time let my listeners know that, yeah, I have a unique path and I've worn a lot of hats, but I'm still a fan. And I love nothing more than being able to go to a game and cheer loud and, boo and, enjoy the emotional swings that you'll see during a game.
Okay, you're a tiebreaker scout. What we didn't mention was that you have organized combines as well, so you have a real deep understanding of what the purpose of a combine is and how it can be most effective. What are some of the things that combines should achieve?
Well, first and foremost, and coaches who say anything otherwise are lying. What you're looking for at a combine is explosive athletes with quick feet. That's universal, right? So these tests, and everybody gets hung up on the 40-yard dash and the vertical leap. What we're looking for and what scouts are looking for and coaches are looking for is guys who have those fast twitch muscles that are explosive. That's what the game is about. That's explosive plays are made by explosive players. And at every position, whether it's a defensive lineman, and by the way, I hope we get a chance to talk about the level of talent in the CFL amongst pass rushers because it gets better every year. But you're looking for guys who can bat balls, who can get after the quarterback, who are explosive laterally, can move side to side and cover ground. Football is so much about speed now. And that's what you're looking for in a combine is guys who can move their feet, be explosive, and have burst. All those different adjectives you want to throw, that's first and foremost what we're looking for.
And that's a very desirable quality in the CFL. CFL with the wider field, speed becomes
absolutely
a real premium.
Yes.
Well, the CFL even more so than possibly the NFL. So let's talk about now. So you become a player, you end up now on the radio, and here's the part I'm confused about. Why would a guy who has a radio show in the United States care about the Canadian Football League? You are so far removed from the everyday CFL, message window, if you will. I mean, it's not like faxes come flying to your station letting you know on a daily basis. You have to be proactive to find out what's going on in the CFL, no?
You do, but you know what? The internet's a beautiful thing. That's A. B, Commissioner Cohan and company have done a great job in trying to maintain a U.S. broadcasting presence each year. And now this year, not only with games being on NBC Sports Channel, but on ESPN2, that's music to my ears. And then lastly, you know what, Frank, I was born in the late 70s. I was a child of the 80s, and I can still remember watching the games. I think we've talked about Hamilton with the striped goalposts. Okay, that's how far back that goes, because back in the 80s, ESPN was looking for content, and they would play CFO games on tape delay, and I thrived on that. I mean, I remember watching those guys, and I remember thinking, man, Ray Elgard from Saskatchewan pushes off all the time. That guy gets away with murder, you know? So it's been in my blood since the 80s. I've never not followed the CFL, and I'm just in love with the league, and yeah, I'll always be a fan and always do my best to kind of help push people to look to the CFL, especially during the downtime during the summer when U.S. fans are fiending for football and feel like they don't have an outlet. Well, the CFL is a great outlet.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for doing what we're trying to do here. I'm Canadian, and I live in a CFL town, and I go to CFL home games, and I can understand why I'm doing my best to see what we can do about raising the profile of the game, and I'm grateful that you do it. And there are, since I started this program, I'm beginning to find out there are many an American who appreciates the Canadian game, which isn't solely Canadian. You know, most of the players are from the U.S., and, you know, it's a great place for American kids that want to continue the dream to play. Can you define for us how important you think it is for individual players that come here to Canada to play football, and give us an idea of how passionate, you know, since we're talking about the passion of football, how passionate players are in the U.S. about football. We see it on television, or some of us go to stadiums in the U.S., but we really don't live the football that's in the U.S. Give us a flavor of that and how passionate you are about the game in the U.S.
Well, I think maybe the best way to articulate that is to let your listeners up north understand what college football is like in the U.S., okay? These guys, it may not have always been that way, but now, whether we're talking a small Division II school or Notre Dame, Alabama, Ohio State, et cetera, being a college football player is a full-time job. Okay, Division I football players get about 3 weeks off from the time their spring semester ends until the time in mid-June when they're expected to be back on campus taking classes, going through the summer, quote, voluntary strength and conditioning program on campus, leading up to training camp in the season. Every hour of their day is accounted for, either academically or through football. There's pressure. The cost of an education in the U.S. has skyrocketed, like so many other things in our country. And in exchange for that football scholarship, those coaches and universities have a lot of money invested in these players, and thus they're going to get every bit of effort they can. So the guys who actually play college football in the U.S. are hardworking guys. Now, not everybody's the same in terms of intelligence level or their character and things of that nature, but you can't play college football in the U.S. without having a strong love of the game. So anytime you see an American player on the field in the Canadian Football League, that is a guy who has tremendous work ethic and is a guy who loves the game of football, without a doubt. To have done the work that it takes to separate yourself to become a professional, I think that gets lost, not only here in the States, but in Canada especially. I think that gets lost. These guys have a tremendous passion for football because it is work. It is hard work to be a college football player in the U.S. in terms of the time commitment.
There's a lot of talk about college football and whether it gives back as much as it takes from the players. I think there was even an issue with trying to figure out a way to basically improve the immediate financial benefit for players that are playing now in college football, as opposed to waiting till they hit, hit it, I'll say, big in the NFL. Where is that at, in your opinion, and how realistic is it to have a players association in college football?
Players Association is probably unrealistic, but I'll give something, Frank, for your listeners to Google when they get a chance. The Ed O'Bannon lawsuit is gaining momentum, and that is going to determine the future of college football and college athletics here in the U.S. Ed O'Bannon, if people recall, was a standout basketball player at UCLA back in the 90s. He filed a lawsuit specifically to the NCAA, and I believe that EA Sports, the video game maker, is named as a co-defendant. But basically he's saying, hey, you guys have used my likeness. You've made tons of money off of me in this video game, none of which I ever saw. UCLA still sells jerseys with my number. It just doesn't have my name on the back. Two entities have profited off of me, continue to profit off of me. That stops. I want to get paid. I think every athlete should get paid. So that is going to be a landmark case of epic proportions. I think the NCAA is going to fight that tooth and nail. But when you start tracking the dollars, the television revenue, I think there's a strong case for not necessarily players getting a salary per se, but I think there's a strong case for a split of revenues between all of college athletes and the institution, or the NCAA splitting revenue with the schools and schools figuring out how to divide that evenly amongst all the athletes, male, female, football, golf, what have you. But you look at Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football, the Heisman Trophy winner from Texas A&M. It is incredible how many of his jerseys are flying off the shelves, not just in College Station, Texas, and in the state of Texas, but nationwide. Whole lot of Texas A&M jerseys that are Johnny Manziel's number that are being sold, and that kid's not getting a penny. And he's involved in some of that litigation to try to change that. So it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out, but it'll play out in the courts. That's clear.
How will it affect the leadership of the NCAA? You know what
I
mean?
Isn't that an oxymoron? Leadership and NCAA? I don't know if those two terms go together.
You're right. It was a misnomer. how will it change the deck chairs at the NCAA? On the good ship NCAA.
Yeah, I think what we're going to see is, I hate to say this, but I certainly don't want to get political on your show, but what you see with the NCAA is kind of a microcosm of the American economy, in that you have a very elite group of people in America that make all the money, have all the wealth, have 90% of dollars in the U.S. or, the property of 10% of the citizens. It's really very strange. In the NCAA, the number of dollars that they bring in is astronomical, right? So right. I think if things go the players' way, it's just you're going to see an evening out, a distribution of wealth, so to speak, that I think will be a good thing for college football, a good thing for college athletics, good thing for fans. The one thing that hasn't been mentioned that nobody's talking about, the cost of going to a big-time college football game in the SEC, the Big 12, steadily rising. It's very expensive. If you want to get a ticket to watch Alabama versus Texas A&M, September 14th in College Station, it's going to cost you about $612 to get a ticket. You start doing the math on on a 90,000-seat stadium that will be sold out, somebody's making a ton of money, and it's not the players. So I think you'll see a leveling of dollars and how they're distributed.
Now, you may wonder,
in terms of affecting leadership, I don't know that it's going to have a negative impact on the NCAA per se. I just think we're going to be talking about dollars being dished out.
Yeah, okay, I'm just thinking that it'll be the kind of, there are different – well, look what happened here, to use hockey as an example. They had the president of the Players Association, or the main representative for the Players Association. The character of that person is defined by the challenge that they're up against. And I think that's what's going to happen with the NCAA, is that whoever's going to be, again, that oxymoron, the leadership of the NCAA is going to be reflective of the battle that they're going to be having, I suppose. The reason I mention it is that it has an impact on the Canadian Football League and football players in general. Here in Canada, the players don't make that much money. It would make a big difference to these players to come here, and prior to the, most of them play football just because they love the game. They're not making, you know, some of them, most of them aren't making six figures here in Canada.
Right. Right.
And the reason I brought that up is that these players could end up being rewarded for their college contribution and then play in the CFL without concerns about having a second or a third job. Because economically, these guys have made such a large commitment to the game and have really not drawn as much from the game as the game has taken from them. And I'm not here, I'm not some socialist here. I'm just trying to point out that it would be better for the football players and the game of football, because a lot of players would not be so, how can I put this, so desperate to play for a little bit of money, rather continue playing the part of them that wants to play because they love it so much. It would be great. I guess maybe I've developed a personal relationship with some of the players, and I feel for them more than just players now. I feel for them as people. I don't think that's any different than I would feel for hockey players or basketball players that aren't getting from what they're doing what I consider a reasonable reward. How does that affect the character of the players that come to the CFL, in your opinion?
It's a great question. It's an interesting topic. I would say that I think you are always still going to have guys in Canada that are playing not because of the money, but because of, A, the love of the game, and, B, that dream of making it to the NFL. I think that is always going to exist in Canada when you're talking about American players. Because of the Warren Moons, the Cameron Wakes, the Jeff Garcias, you know, all those guys who, you know, paid their dues up north, came back down, and have, you know, had very successful careers. I think that will never change regardless of the money that guys may or may not make from their college careers. I think you're always going to have that hungry player who's dreaming about, if I just keep playing, if I can stay active, NFL guys will see me for what I'm worth, you know. And I think likewise, you know, as the CFL, and now I'm an outsider, you know, I'm not in the CFL anymore, but to me, from the outside perspective, CFL looks pretty healthy to me right now. And I think we're also going to continue to see Canadian guys getting a chance to go to NFL camps and prove themselves, you know. So I think two elements you're always going to have is a love of the game and hunger, regardless of the kind of money that these guys make. But while they're in college in the States, I think that's always going to exist, because a lot of these guys, man, football got them out of a bad home life, got them out of a bad neighborhood. It's been their ticket, and if that ticket takes them north of the border, then so be it. But football's their life, and I think that for a lot of these guys, that will never change, whether it's they're in Manitoba or Minnesota, you know.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Warren McCarty, ESPN Radio. You're watching, or I should say, you're listening to Candid Frank live streamed on Rouge Radio. And we'll be back right after this.
CO2. Chad Owens, favorite player ever. He's from Hawaii, playing in the Great White North.
He's not just good, he's real good.
He's into MMA.
From the gridiron to the octagon. He's got game. This is his game.
He's the total package.
He's got the hard one.
He's got a great cup. He's a family man,
team player, dedication to the max. True blue through and through. I love watching this guy.
He's a highlight waiting to happen.
CFL on TSN. You need to see these guys play.
Don't forget, Mike Richards, TSN 1050, every morning.
1, 2, 3.
We're the Argo Cheerleaders.
And you're listening to the Candid Frank Live Show.
We're the Argo Cheerleaders.
And you're listening to the Candid Frank Live Show. Yay! Go Frank! Go Frank!
Go Frank!
Go Frank!
There you go, Frank.
Thank you. There are some advantages to having a microphone.
Listen
that was
to
one
this,
of them.
Man. You got the Argo cheerleaders? How awesome is that? Wow.
Like I said, I'm making some friends with the Argos, and I'm developing a personal relationship with them. And I meant the football players, not the cheerleaders. But they're very sweet, and they're very kind, and they were very. It was an exhibition game against Montreal, and they were there. Okay, shut up. Now my wife's going to start kicking in.
Love it.
This is what happens when you do a show from your home. You know
what I mean? Frank, there's heard that.
There's nothing I can get away from, buddy. Yeah, you know, you stole a little bit of my thunder, but that's cool. That's fine. I've always been amazed at the healing power of the game of football. And by the healing power, you touched on it a little bit. There are a lot of players who come from tough situations that many don't survive from, and you referred to football being their ticket, you know, and basically their ticket out of the doldrums or their ticket out of, you know, impending doom, really, because there are really some players who really escape. I mean, I don't want to talk about the New England Patriot right now, who almost escaped his history. But the fact is, some of them actually are very grateful to the game of football, even though it may not in the long term repay them for all their hard work. It does give them an opportunity.
It absolutely does. I mean, you think about guys who, if not for football, would not get an education in America. And if we're talking about guys going up to play up north in Canada, you know, there are a lot of guys who, whether they're making $60,000 or $200,000, they're making some sort of living from football where they otherwise may not have gone to college, may not have made that type of living, may have turned to a life of crime. You know, there's all sorts of variables and scenarios, but yeah, you're absolutely right. There's many guys that football has literally saved their life, literally given them a life, and you know, a lot of, we talked about this the other night. There are a lot of guys who leave the States, you know, go to Canada, find a niche in the CFL, make Canada their home, you know, forever. I know tons of guys have done that. And, you know, I think that's awesome too. So.
And they work really hard. And by that, I mean, they work really hard on the field to play for the team, to get the respect of the fans and create a name for themselves that transcends the game itself and works its way into the community. And I'm happy for them, and I've learned about a few of them as well, and it is actually nice to see that happen. Now, they also, the players in the CFL, I don't know, are the NFL players the same? The players in the CFL spend a lot of time in the community. I hear they give credit to the CFL upper management for motivating players to spend time in the community. But I see it as genuine and almost self-propelled desire to be involved in the community with young people, you know, and just putting the CFL out there and the team that they're with, letting them know that we're in your community and we care about what's going on here. Is it any different in the NFL?
Huge, huge difference. Okay, let me brag on guys in the Canadian Football League and CFL management, for that matter. The community outreach, the availability, the visibility, the ability to reach out and touch a CFL player is tenfold versus what it is here in the U.S. with NFL players, and that's for a variety of reasons. A, the money. B, the intense pressure that those guys are under when they do have the chance to get away, they want to get away, right? CFL does not have the extended mini camps, the OTA practices, the at-the-facility strength and conditioning programs. You know, guys in the CFL are able to get away, right? So when they are there, you know, the teams – I do a wonderful job of getting them out in the community and having them visible. In the NFL, it's such a grind. Those guys, for the most part, want to get away. The ones who do PR, you know, events, reading to kids at school, charitable events, appearances, etc., do a great job. No doubt about that. But it pales in comparison to what the guys in the Canadian Football League do on a weekly basis. I've always admired that about CFL and its players, that they're ready, willing, and able to get out in the community. I love that. But whether it's Rider fans, you know, going up to Saskatoon and seeing some Rough Rider players up there, or whether, you know, the big cities in Vancouver and Toronto, CFL players have always been amazing in that regard.
Yeah, we're very lucky in that regard, and obviously it doesn't hurt that these players appreciate their fans and do this kind of stuff. You know, I amaze myself sometimes when I go to the football game. You're talking about the players, the kinds of individuals that make it in football. What kind of traps, if you were to give advice to somebody as far as playing football is concerned, what should they concentrate on? If you were giving advice to a younger player, whether they're planning on playing college in Canada, the U.S., or the CFL, NFL, what are some of the main things? We talked about speed being something and that explosiveness. Are there any other things, qualities, personal qualities that people, you know, should be aware of if they're interested in making a football career for themselves?
Absolutely. I've talked to kids that go through my combines and camps about this a lot. I talk to a lot of college players when they're thinking about, you know, trying out for the CFL or the Arena League, if they know that they're not going to get a shot in the NFL right out of college. I talk to them all the time about two things, and that is their daily work ethic in terms of, you know, what they accomplished that day to make themselves better. And just a brief synopsis, I basically tell guys that when they get ready to go to bed at night, ask themselves one question. That's a very simple question, and that question will tell them on a daily basis whether or not they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, and that is, did I do something today to make myself a better player? Whether it's, you know, strength and conditioning work, or watching film, or speaking to a coach, or watching a game on TV and watching a specific guy who plays that position, or reading, you know, an article about a player that plays your position or a coach that you admire, something related that will educate you either mentally or make you better physically. What did you do that day to make yourself a better player? And if you can answer in the negative that you didn't do anything, then you've wasted a day. And that day you wasted might not have been wasted by another guy who wants your job and is going to be competing for that same job with the Calgary Stampeders a year from now, or whatever. Or for a high school kid, you know, there's another dude who didn't waste a day that wants your scholarship. So I always try to plant that seed in the back of your mind. What did you do today to make yourself a better player, whether it's mental or physical? And then the other thing I tell them is you always have to be cognizant of who you surround yourself with, who you associate with, because people either bring you up or they'll tear you down.
Now, that's the toughest, I think. That'll be you're asking somebody to take an honest look at themselves when you consider there are people. I mean, when they get to college, and once they're of college star quality, it gets pretty hard to hear yourself, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Because of, and for a lot of these guys, they're such studs at the high school level. Forever they've been told how awesome they are. And that first year on college campus is culture shock and a reality check for many of them. They don't have home-cooked meals anymore, and they're not the best by far and away athlete on the football field. All of a sudden, they are one of many great athletes. And a lot of these guys have never, you know, to use a boxing term, they've never had their chin checked. And the first time they get hit in the face, they don't like it. So, yeah, it's very hard. That's a great way of putting it, that it's very hard to hear your own voice for a lot of these guys. So,
And it's not for want of trying either. You know, you may think you're trying to hear your voice, but it's hard to – it happens to people like you and I, you know.
Sure,
when
certainly.
We become big stars, right? We can't hear anything above our fame.
Yeah, well,
we can't hear
the Frank fame I've not achieved yet. I'm striving, though.
I
striving.
Frank fame. There is no such thing.
I need to put that on a T-shirt and sell them down here in the States. Frank fame. Get you some.
There you go. There you go. You can call me a fame caster.
fame caster.
So you know, it's obvious that that football is such a religious experience in the United States. Here in Canada, let's look at it from your perspective. You were talking. Let's talk about the game itself and how it's changed in the time that you've followed it. You were referring to one specific area where the pass rush seems to have really improved in Canada.
Yes. Yep.
How so?
Well, from two perspectives. So that defensive line and, you know, cornerbacks, I guess, as well. But the defensive line having to line up a yard off the ball. When I first started in the scouting business, I always thought, gosh, it's such a disadvantage for the defense, you know, because you think about short yardage run plays, especially down inside the 5 yard line, you know, teams basically always convert. But that 1 yard of separation, just in the last, I want to say 5 years, and I don't have any stats to back this up, Frank, so I'm not sure if sack numbers are better than they were 5 years ago, but just the quality of pass rush. Well, we're seeing faster, more explosive athletes for sure. But now those faster, more explosive athletes that are playing D-line in Canada have a yard of extra
momentum.
They get an extra step of momentum, an extra step of explosiveness as they blow into that offensive lineman, right? And if you think about it like this, here in the States, you know, maybe there's 6 to 7 inches of separation from an offensive lineman and defensive lineman, maybe 10 inches to a foot, you know, just based on how far off the ball the defensive line is. Versus, and so you don't necessarily have a lot of room to build momentum before that offensive lineman can get their hands on you. In the CFL, you've got an entire yard. That's tremendous. So, you know, in your first segment, I know you were talking about the importance of being able to protect a guy like Anthony Calvillo and Buck Pearson, Winnipeg. That's getting tougher and tougher every year for CFL offensive linemen because these defensive linemen are tremendous athletes. They've got a yard of separation where they're building up some speed and momentum. So I've certainly have seen that change, no doubt. And I'll also say the interior linemen, many of whom are Canadian players, I've seen those guys get bigger, faster, stronger. You know, back in the day, you know, Doug Brown was like the exception to the rule. Now it looks to me like there's a whole lot of Doug Browns in the CFL in terms of Canadian guys that are really good interior defensive pass rushers.
The fact remains that Canadians are, I guess, pigeonholed as either offensive linemen or backups. And then, of course, depending on what position, there's a real good Canadian, they got to find another Canadian that plays as well as that guy or as close to as well as that guy because of the ratio. How confusing is that for you as an American football fan? And do you see it as a complication for making the game a better game?
You know, that's been a hotly debated topic, even when I was scouting, because, of course, the inclination is you want to get the best 42 dudes on the field or, you know, whatever it is, 45, whatever it is they're doing now on game day in the CFL. That's not the way it works, right? Because if it was the best 42 dudes, you know, 39 of those guys might be Americans if coaches had their way, right? That's not the way it works. However, I don't know, Frank. I know it probably seems to your listeners like I'm just bragging on Canadian guys in the CFL, but the Canadian players are better. The athletes are better, right? You know, Andy Fontus was real close to making the Chicago Bears a few years ago. And I look at that the young Canadian receiver that kind of had the breakout game against Montreal week 1 for Winnipeg, Jade Etienne. That kid can play. Once he starts to develop confidence and stuff, athletically, that kid can run, he can jump, he can catch. You know, I see tremendous growth from Canadian players. They're not there yet. There would always be an American counterpart that I could go find that would be better. But in terms of growing the sport, making it better, I think those rules are always going to be in place, and I think they should be in place. It was, trust me, it was frustrating when I was doing personnel. We talk about, we kind of have to have 7 starters that are Canadians, which I think is really more of an understood gentleman's agreement than, I don't know that that's an actual written rule per se, but, we've got to have our 19, and, we have to have our 7 Canadian starters, and, worrying about the import-non-import ratio and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, for it to be truly Canadian, for it to be, in order for there to be a pack house at, in Regina, you're going to have some Canadian guys, and rightfully so. It's the Canadian Football League. And for Americans, it's a privilege to have another opportunity to go play and play for a paycheck. And I think the guys who understand that, get that, appreciate, what it's like for a Canadian guy when everybody's supposed to play hockey in Canada. So these guys that play football that are Canadian football players, they clearly love the game too. So there, at times it's frustrating, but it is the right thing. I think the ratio is right. I think it's right in terms of the health of the Canadian Football League to ensure that there are always Canadian players on that field.
It is also important that I guess the theory for some teams in the CFL is that they lost a lot of their fan base in the blackout era of television, and now the theory is now that the main pool for them to bring back younger fans are to make themselves aware and build the football players in the country, the football teams in the country. So it's almost important to have Canadian players, which is why I asked the question in the first place, to keep the interest in the game alive and well. Without the players playing, there is no opportunity to develop fans. It has to be a grassroots thing. We've seen the reverse with hockey in the U.S. I know you're not an expert in hockey, but wherever hockey has gone, hockey has grown. That's what makes it a better sport to watch, because the people, A, understand it, B, it becomes part of their lifestyle. I don't know how much you know about the health of our game, the football here in Canada. We have, in BC, we have a team that plays in, I think it's what, Division 3?
Simon Fraser. They're
yes,
in
Simon
NCAA
Fraser.
Division 2. Sure.
Is it
sure.
2? Yeah, okay, 2.
Yep.
Do you see more of that happening? Canadian athletes are developing a very good reputation in the sense that, the best players in baseball, the guys that rise to the top, we've had a few Canadians rise to the top. In football, not so much. In basketball, the number one draft pick was a kid from here in Brampton. Next year, they're talking it could actually happen again, that in the NBA, a Canadian will be drafted first overall. The highest-rated high school player in the U.S. is a Canadian.
Sure.
So I kind of agree with you that, sports is sports. Anybody who shows interest in the game and works hard at it, like you said, can, if there's the avenue for them to develop, and that's the biggest problem we have with football here is we don't have the same kind of coaching you do. Now we can touch on something, one of your favorite topics, which is developing quarterbacks. Here in Canada, we hope someday to have a Canadian quarterback in the CFL. Train quarterbacks. How hard is that?
Let me jump in on that, Frank. I'll say this.
I know you're going to.
Okay. The fact that there's not a CFL starter that's a Canadian is understandable. Okay. But make no mistake about it, and I've had some ugly knockdown, drag-out fights with other personnel and GM guys. Eric Tillman, went round and round with him forever. CFL GMs and CFL coaches will bring in American quarterbacks that aren't any damn good in lieu of signing a Canadian quarterback, giving him a shot, okay? Why that is, I don't know. For example, Edmonton had Jeremiah Mazzoli last year. Anybody who ever watched his career at Oregon, and then the 1 year he played at Ole Miss, and then the 2 days he lasted as a quarterback in San Francisco before they moved him to fullback, knew that that guy could not play quarterback at the professional level. And I'm not sure if he's still on their practice squad this year, but the fact he spent the entire season with them last year was a wasted roster spot that should have been that should have been a Canadian quarterback, whether it's a kid from St. Mary's or Guelph or from wherever, I don't know. But when we look at all these successful Canadian receivers, right, that are playmakers, that go out there in the CFL every week and make plays, somebody threw them the ball in college, especially the guys that played in Canada. Somebody threw them the ball. And I'll say this, in the Arena League, I had a young man from Canada that started for me for 2 years. His name was Steve Pinella, who played quarterback at St. Mary's out in Halifax. And he could not get a sniff from any of the eight CFL franchises. And he set records for us in the Arena League down here in the AF2 Developmental League. He was 6'2", 215 pounds, had a gun. He was a tough Canadian kid and never could get a sniff. He ended up playing, you know, 4 or 5 years of arena football and then went into law enforcement. And I think he's back in the Toronto area now. But he's a perfect example of a guy who never could get a sniff because he was Canadian. And yet every year, the CFL GMs and coaches will bring in quarterbacks from the States that just can't freaking play and certainly can't play in the CFL, where you have to be accurate, you have to have a strong arm, quick release, see the field. You know, there's so many tougher things about playing quarterback in the Canadian game than there are in the American game. And yet every year I see mediocre quarterbacks from the States getting signed. That rubs me the wrong way, and I'm an old American quarterback. So I know I kind of rambled and went off on a soapbox there, but the fact that there aren't eight, you know, number three quarterbacks in the CFL right now that are all Canadians, that's a travesty.
Well, you know, you're speaking basically, you're preaching to the choir, okay? So don't ever apologize for getting on your soapbox. I have to tell you that we've got some young kids. The CFL is trying to write that. I don't know if you're aware of the program where they're bringing in college-age players to training camp in each of the CFL cities with each of the CFL teams. I had the good fortune to meet a kid named William Finch, who came out of high school. He was as a high schooler, they had him training with the Ticats. His first year at university at Western, coming out of high school, the first eight or so games, he played the last two games, and suffice it to say that he played like a veteran college player. It would be a shame, you know, to see that kind of talent wasted. And that's, you know, you want soapbox? I'll stand on mine now. It is really, it's condescending to take a talent like that and let it be wasted. Especially in a league that is so-called Canadian, and not give a Canadian kid a fair chance. Now, is it the blame of the CFL for that? I'm not sure. Is it the blame of the teams? I'm not sure. But unless somebody grabs the bull by the horns, I hate to use a Texas term, grabs the Texas longhorn by the horn, you know, nothing's going to change. And you mentioned a very important number. I don't know that they couldn't make a third quarterback be definitely Canadian, and they couldn't.
Well, okay, let's back up.
Well,
here
how
right
could
quick,
they
Frank.
Fix it? So, how could they fix it?
Very easily. We're not talking 32 NFL teams with 31 billionaire owners, and then the guys who represent the Green Bay fan base. We're talking about nine teams with Ottawa. Nine. You get the nine owners in a room, the CFL governors, and you say, you know what? We'll keep the X number of Americans per roster. That's fine. Because right now it's X number of Americans, and then the rest are Canadians, and then the three quarterbacks, they don't count. Well, all three end up being Americans, right? Well, let's say we add one American to the regular roster. You got three quarterbacks. One needs to be Canadian. All of a sudden, you've got the best nine quarterbacks that Canada has to offer. They're the third dude that may or may not play during the season. You got two Americans, you know, one's your starter, one's your backup, and you got a third guy that's a Canadian to be your developmental guy. Your roster size doesn't change a bit. The end. It's that simple. And that is simply a matter of Mark Cohan and the CFL GMs and owners sitting down and saying, we're going to commit to that position. Because I think if you really look at it, it's you're doing college football in Canada justice. You're doing junior football in Canada justice. And more importantly, let's be real. Let's go look at rosters. Other than Winnipeg, when does a number three quarterback ever actually get in the game unless it's a blowout, you know, and you want to get a guy
that
a
reference,
series or two?
You know, I'm not letting that go by. Was that a reference to Buck Pierce or half a Buck Pierce?
Hey, man, look, everybody loves Buck Pierce for two quarters, right? It's a whole lot of fun.
That's why I said he's
18
half a
games?
Buck Pierce.
Man, come on. Hey, you know, I threw this out there at you yesterday when we were talking, and Drew Tate's got his elbow thing now, and, you know, Buck Pierce lost 25 pounds, and every time he gets hit, he's, like, limping, and there's a shoulder, there's a knee. Dude, Eli Manning and Drew Brees, over the last eight NFL seasons, they have combined to miss one football game, and that was Drew Brees sitting out during their Super Bowl campaign when they'd already won their division. 8 years between two guys who throw the ball all the time, you can't get Buck Pierce and Drew Tate to play three games in a row. It's gross.
Well, it is what it is, and I'm a firm believer of, as we discussed then, winners win, losers lose. Players who get hurt.
Yep.
Players who stay healthy, stay healthy. It's just the way it is. It's unfortunate. But, you know, everybody's hoping that this is the exception. And I don't blame Winnipeg for hoping that Buck Pierce is the exception. He's an exceptional quarterback.
He's great when he's playing.
Yeah,
I
can
watch.
Understand.
Sure.
Yep. I've enjoyed both his games against Montreal, and he did a marvelous job with them with a decent amount of protection. And as you heard me say at the beginning of the program, you need a great quarterback in the CFL, but you also need to protect them. You know, it's
yes. Very
you
much
don't
so.
Give it, you don't give a quarterback time to pass. He ain't going to pass. He's going to fall down and be under somebody.
Especially when you only have two downs to get 10 yards. It's a big
there
difference.
You go.
You know?
Imagine if they'd have changed it to meters being Canadian. That would make it tougher.
How about
I'm
that?
Glad
two meters.
Stuck the yards. I'm glad we stuck the yards.
So, Frank, but to just to get back to the point about Canadian quarterbacks, it is an easy fix. Mark Cohan sits down with the CFL GMs and their ownership group, all nine of them. Get the nine head coaches in there. You got, you know, 30-something dudes. You add a Canadian quarterback to be your third guy, the end. It's that simple.
You
can't find nine worthy Canadian quarterbacks in the country that aren't, you know, that wouldn't be worthy of being a number three in the league.
Well, when you consider that a lot of number threes never see the light of day anyway.
Exactly. There's no risk, but yet you might find some reward, you know?
But this might be the 1 year that they can't do it because of the expansion. The Argos are keeping – I haven't been to practice for about a week, but they still have five quarterbacks in camp. And one wonders why one can't be Canadian.
I'm not ready to do cartwheels about Jim Barker, for one thing. I know they hoist the Grey Cup and did it at home, the 100th Grey Cup and all that, but – sometimes I wonder if they win in spite of Jim Barker's antics. But to have – now, you've got Ricky Ray. Good Lord. You need three quarterbacks. I mean, and especially once the season starts, so many fewer reps, okay? It's more about sustaining yourself rather than pushing and thriving, right? Now the games are real. Now the bumps and bruises hurt that much more. You're getting through those two or three practices a week. You don't need five guys. That's silly. It's absolutely silly.
Well, they had that about a week ago. I'm sure that probably has changed since. But having said that, all right, so the quarterback issue in Canada, we have the talent. You believe we have the talent. You believe
there is
a solution.
It. Yes.
And someday maybe you'll be heard or somebody will come up with the original idea that they didn't hear here. But, you know, regardless, hopefully that does fix itself. Now, if we were to define where Canadians have made strides in football in recent memory, where would that be, positionally speaking?
Receiver, without question. I just see so much talent at the receiver position that are Canadian players, you know. Well, let's take Andy Fontus, you know, for example, right? Leaves Saskatchewan, goes to the NFL, doesn't make it with the Bears, lands the big deal in Hamilton. But he was close to making that roster, right? Well, 10 years ago, were there any Canadians getting a chance to play in the NFL, much less lasting until the final cuts? You know, I don't think we can say that, you know. I mentioned the Jade Etienne kid. Just the Canadian receivers aren't just slow possession guys anymore, you know. You get some guys with some size, you get some smaller players as well, but they can all run. So I would say, from my perspective, I've seen huge improvement in that regard. Now, on the flip side, I don't think, I might be wrong here, Frank, I don't think I've seen a great deal of improvement amongst offensive linemen that are Canadian.
And yet that seems to be the go-to move.
Sure.
Brought on by the Montreal Alouettes.
Yep.
In recent memory.
Yep.
Okay,
let's make all of our skill players Americans, make the offensive linemen all Canadians, but I don't know that I've seen any awesomeness, you know, in terms of a true Canadian at the offensive line.
Okay. We've got a caller, and
sure.
If I'm not mistaken, I think I know who it is. Is this Mike?
Yes, Frank. How you doing?
Good. Mike from Minnesota, another... I referred to you and others like you that love the Canadian game. I have an ESPN radio guy on here. His name is Warren McCoy. Warren does his show out of Colorado. And Mike is in Minnesota, so two northern climes and two areas that have great football. Mike, what did you want to add to the program?
No, I didn't know if you guys were previewing some of the games coming up this weekend. Did you guys touch
yeah,
on that?
Yeah, We were. That is one of. You know what? We can do that now.
Okay.
That'd be great to do that now. I did it on my own, so people know what I think. Why don't we switch gears and let's start, Mike, with you. Okay, you've got four games today to talk about that'll be taking place. The one tomorrow, of course, with the Argonauts hosting Saskatchewan. Mike, you can go first, and then Warren can kick in with his opinion.
All right. I guess. Tomorrow's game, I don't know, it's sort of a tough one to call because the Riders are really rolling and, you know, we know that the Argos are a good team. But I look at defensively, I'm just really wondering what's going on with the Argos right now. I don't really understand, you know, why they're struggling so much. I know they had a lot of changeover, but they just don't seem like the same team to me. I'm thinking that the Riders are probably going to go in there and probably take it to them like they did last year on the Thanksgiving game.
Warren?
To me, it's simple. There's no Ricky Foley. He was I can't remember the guy's name. He was the Italian guy who's always kissing people. Big defensive tackle.
Yeah, Adriano Belli.
Yes. Okay, so those two guys, first of all, Canadians, and second of all, guys that had a nasty edge and would get after the quarterback. Those are two huge losses that nobody, you know, people just kind of blew over because Ricky Ray and Chad Owens get all the headlines. There's your defensive glaring weakness right there is an attitude and productivity from those two guys.
They brought in Khalif Mitchell, I think, to bring in that missing edge. But Khalif Mitchell had a reputation for not having much control. But
sure,
he's displayed a fair enough amount of control. In the last game, he avoided, you know, taking out the quarterback when he could have, and then did take out the quarterback. But I think his reputation got him the penalty more than what his actions were. Is he enough, or do you think they need more, or just they lost two guys that really meant a lot to the defense?
I think they lost two guys that meant a lot to the defense and only gained one guy who's new. You know, I think those are huge losses. I really do.
Is it possible also, especially in BC, what happened, at least from my And I say this humbly because I'm by no stretch a football expert, but it seemed to me that the offense that the Argos displayed against BC was ineffective. And that, in my opinion, always makes it difficult on the defense. You know, there really is a symbiotic relationship between defense and offense. You know, I understand that sometimes a defense has to carry an offense, and I understand sometimes an offense has to carry a defense. But there is a fluid, life between the two during a game. If the offense doesn't drive at all, they make it harder for the defense to protect. You know, it's that bend, not break.
Yep. Right.
And I think as much to blame as the defense, I happen to think that the Argo offense was to blame for, not to blame, but the loss. Anyway, for the loss, the offense didn't do their job, and the defense didn't do theirs either because, quite frankly, either you score more than the other team or you allow less. You only got two options. There's only two options. You don't have a third. So yeah, I think it was more to it than just the defense, Mike. I think overall, as a team, they were ineffectual, and BC was fired up and ready to go. You would have thought that the team would have rallied around Khalif Mitchell because he became the focal point, and I kind of think it worked in BC's favor if we were to talk emotionally between the two teams. So, Warren, how do you feel about the game between Saskatchewan and Toronto? Are you well-versed enough to make an opinion?
I think Saskatchewan, just like Mike said, Saskatchewan's rolling. Now, I'm not a long-term believer in Darian Durant. I've seen him throw too many interceptions, have too many just games where he looks lost to really, you know, be a full-time believer. But I think Saskatchewan's playing on some emotion right now. They're believing in what they're doing. And, yeah, I have no doubt that they can go in there and get a win.
Tough game for Montreal. They're up against Calgary, at the end of the Grey Cup. Immediately after the Grey Cup, they were crowned as the favorite to win the Grey Cup in the 101st Grey Cup in Saskatchewan. Is Montreal in trouble in going below 500 in probably, I don't know what, 5 or 6 years?
This game is, I know it sounds so cliche, Mike in Minnesota hears it all the time. We watch NFL games. Everybody talks about early season must-win games.
Yeah.
Toronto proved last year going 500 is just get in the playoffs, right? But this game right here is going to determine a lot for Montreal because, and, you know, it's a big deal here in Colorado because Dan Hawkins was the head coach of the Colorado Buffaloes. They ran him out of town. It was a complete debacle. Jim Popp raises a lot of eyebrows hiring him with no previous CFL experience other than, you know, being a camp volunteer or whatever last year. But what's more bothersome is, despite having Doug Berry on staff, you've got an offensive coordinator / quarterbacks coach, a running backs coach, receivers coach, and an offensive line coach that combined had never coached a CFL game prior to this year. And that the play calling and the offensive effort last week against Winnipeg was, I don't know that I've ever seen anything as bad. Anthony Calvillo voiced some frustration. It'll be interesting to see if they're able to bounce back and look more like they did in week one versus what they put, the product they put on the field this last week. So I think this is a huge, huge game for Montreal.
Mike?
Yeah, to his point, I feel like last year, or last 5 years under Mark Trestman, the Owls like to run an offense very similar to the New England Patriots, which was about, getting the ball out quickly and short passes. And I feel like Dan Hawkins is trying to get away from that, and I feel like he's trying to put his own sort of, imprint on the team, and I just don't think it works. I just feel like if something's not broke, why fix it? And I feel like...
Thank you.
Like, in last week's game, you could visibly see Cavill so frustrated, and, to hear him after the game not only calling out his teammates, but to hear him call out coaches is something that, first off, I've never seen Cavill, that frustrated and angry like that, but for him to call out the coaches, I think speaks a lot to, and I think it would be to Dan Hawkins' best interest if he were to try to revert back to things that the team was more successful with, just from a chemistry standpoint, because for them to be already looking like there's a little bit of fracturing going on this early, I don't think will bode well for the whole year. And I don't know. I mean, as far as I can see defensively, they're really solid. I thought they did a great job last week, so at least that looked good. And, you know, once the, if their defense can keep playing solid, I said before the year, I was like, if their defense can be at least decent, like middle of the pack, if their offense can be anything close to what they've been the last few years, the Owls should be championship contenders by the end of the season. So we'll see what happens. I don't know.
So you see a recovery then. Is this game going to be a game that the recovery is going to begin against Calgary?
I think it will be. Yeah, because Kevin Glenn is actually starting. I don't know if you guys heard that Drew Tate's out. So because of that, I just, you know, we know Kevin Glenn is, he's one of those inconsistent QBs that can be look great at times and it can look terrible at times. So I just feel like defensively, Montreal is capable of stopping them, and there'll just be a question of whether or not their offense will be revert back to the form that we know they're capable of. And if they do so, I think they should come out with a win.
All right, Mike, continue now with the Ticats and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. I know many would suggest that the Ticats being 0-2 isn't that big a surprise, but I got to be honest, it's a big surprise for me. I really thought Hamilton would have done better. I would have thought that they would have been nip and tuck with Winnipeg. And I would have thought that, you know, they would make the playoffs. One of them will make the playoffs. But after seeing what Edmonton's been doing, I'm having difficulty believing it. What do you think of this game, Mike, that's coming up between Hamilton and Winnipeg?
Well, first off, I'd just like to say I think Warner would agree with me on this, that what happened last week, that game at Guelph, I mean, that stadium situation is a joke. I mean, having 12,000 people at a professional football game, you know, the stadium looked like they were playing in a high school in Texas, and it was just, I just think the Ticats have no home field advantage whatsoever. And
absolutely,
because of that, you know, the Bombers' defense, we saw how, you know, to me they look like they're the best defense in the league, and the way they played against the Owls last week, if they can continue that same pressure on Burris, we know if you can get in Burris' face, he'll throw interceptions. And if they can cause some turnovers, we know that Hamilton's defense is, you know, really suspect. So I'd expect Pierce and particularly Chad Simpson, the running back, to have a big game. And if, you know, if the defense can help them, you know, get a couple turnovers, give them good field position, I think the Bombers should go in there and win pretty handily. I don't think it'll be that difficult of a game for them.
Warren?
I think to kind of cherry pick off of what Mike's saying, the stadium, the atmosphere, people forget how important adrenaline and emotion are in a football game. And we saw that week one. Everybody thought that Montreal was going to roll into Winnipeg. The game might be close in the first half, then Montreal would be Montreal, Winnipeg would be Winnipeg, and the Owls would walk away with a, you know, 14-point win, and, you know, yay, we got to see a new stadium. And then, you know, we see 102 decibels from that crowd.
Yeah.
That means something. I've lived it, I've seen it, I've felt it. Crowds do play a role in football games. At every level, they do. And Mike said it right. It's a joke. It's an absolute joke. I don't know that that's what Kent Austin signed up for, you know. And I know there's some frustration there, but I just think, you know, the game is an emotional game, and it's hard to be, you know, out there on the field playing with emotion when there's nobody there watching and it's not, you know, a true tie cap. You know, it's
atmosphere.
Not either win. Yeah, you don't have the atmosphere. And, yeah, I think the Bombers got a huge win. Even though their offense didn't play great, their defense was phenomenal. And, you know, Hamilton's defense is suspect, and I don't know that they're going to, you know, be able to contain Buck Pierce for four quarters, and Simpson is a beast. And I think this game could be a blowout, and I think it could be a situation where things could really get ugly early in Hamilton. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the byproduct result of it all is. But, yeah, totally agree with Mike. Winnipeg should roll.
All right, so you guys agree on all three games. So let's go for 4-for-4. As surprising as Winnipeg's defense has been, you know, everybody was concerned about their offense. Edmonton's front line has held up really well. Their offensive front line, all youngsters, has done a great job. Will they do well against BC this week? Mike, you can go first, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, well, with Edmonton, just in general, when I look at them, I'm not sure what I'm looking at, because in week one, they really looked terrible against Saskatchewan, but now the Riders look like they might just be the best team in the league, and then last week they looked pretty decent against Hamilton, but Hamilton could end up being the worst team in the league, so it's hard to really gauge where they're at. I mean, for them, it all comes down to Mike Riley. And is this guy really going to become their franchise quarterback? Because they've been searching. And if this guy can, you know, I don't know, be anything that resembling that, he doesn't have to be elite, but if he can just be a solid quarterback, that's all they need. I mean, their defense is strong. They're sharp. They get a lot of pressure off the ends from Marcus Howard and Odell Willis. They have one of the best linebacking cores anchored by J.C. Sherrod in the middle, who I think is the best defensive player in the league. And I don't know. I just BC, to me, they seem like, I don't know what it is. They just don't look like the same team they've been the last 2 years. I don't know if they're a step slower on defense. I know they look good against the Argos, but I think that was more of a product of the Argos having a bad day. And offensively, I just feel like Travis Lule is a little bit overrated. The last, you know, year and a half, he hasn't looked quite as good as he did in 2011. I think defenses are starting to get a more grasp of how to get, how to go at him. I think the book is out on how to stop him. And I just think if Edmonton defensively can step up and just slow down Andrew Harris, who's the key to their offense, that's all they need, I think, because on the flip side, I think they know how to, you know, go after BC. We saw them last year pull off a couple good wins against them, so I'm picking Edmonton by a touchdown.
Warren?
This is what, we couldn't go 4-for-4. It just couldn't happen. Right?
It wasn't supposed to happen.
I completely disagree. I think Mike Riley is a franchise quarterback. I don't think he's surrounded by a whole lot of talent. I do like how the offensive line played last week. And by the way, you know, a lot of us here in the States have the clip from YouTube of the big 6'11" offensive lineman blowing up the guy off the interception. I threw that up on Facebook. I'm like, this is the CFL, baby. They don't have offensive weapons that scare people. Fred Stamps, you know what you got with Fred Stamps. Guys out of the backfield, it's kind of running back by committee. I don't think he's blessed with, you know, especially look at like the from the Canadian perspective, he doesn't have an Andy Fontus. He doesn't have, you know, a go-to Canadian guy as well. I don't think Mike Riley is surrounded by a whole lot of talent. I think that's why they haven't just been astronomically awesome on offense in the first 2 weeks. I just don't know if they have the talent to be awesome offensively. In terms of BC, I think Travis Lule is the real deal. I think he's an outstanding quarterback. I think they missed the veteran presence of G. Roy. He's not there anymore. And for what he might have lost in terms of a step, I think it's kind of the NFL Ray Lewis factor. For what he might have lost athletically, I think there's something to be said for in clutch situations being able to talk to other receivers on the sideline. Hey, guys, I'm seeing this. This is open. This is not. We got to focus on this. Play suggestions, just things of that nature. That veteran presence not being there, I think that hurts more so than you know maybe what Wally and company thought. But I think BC wins this football game. I think Edmonton's got a long way to go offensively before they're ready to be a contender. And I think that gets back to personnel, and I don't think they've done a good enough job surrounding Mike Riley or Kerry Joseph or whoever it is that's going to play quarterback for that team. I just don't know if they have the weapons to be awesome.
My feeling's really simple. It's all going to come down to whether that young offensive line can hold back the BC defense. If they can't, it is going to be a BC victory and an easy one if the offensive line buckles a little bit under the pressure. You know, the biggest football term that anybody can say, and it's the most important term in football as far as I'm concerned, it's about bending and not breaking. And the inexperience of Edmonton, I think, is going to cause them to break where BC has the experience. And you guys are right. They don't have the same tools that they had last year, or aren't as efficient as they might have been a few years back. But I don't think Edmonton's ready to take on a team that I think is a lot better than they even showed against Toronto. So it's going to be tough for Edmonton that game. But then again, they've surprised. They may continue. All right. So
the beautiful thing about the CFL, every week you never know.
you don't know. Mike, you got a question for Warren that I may have missed? I'm sure there's about 10 or 12 that I probably missed.
No, I tuned in a little bit later, but I felt like, I guess, Warren, like, how do you compare the CFL to the NFL? Like, is there certain aspects of the, you know, the CFL that you prefer over the NFL, or what is your position on looking at the two leagues?
Well, you know, I spent time in scouting in both leagues. The thing I like about the CFL is the pace of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the two and out, okay, boom, we're going to punt. You know, just that one less play, I like that, actually, because I think special teams oftentimes get overlooked here in the States, both at the college and NFL level, whereas special teams are a huge part of the game in Canada. And, you know, I love the motion towards the line of scrimmage, but as we were talking about earlier, from a defensive line perspective, them being a yard off the ball, to me, is not as much of a disadvantage as a lot of people think, because I think it makes for a better pass rush. So I'm a huge fan of the CFL game, you know. I like the fast pace. I like the flow. I like the big hits. I like the wide open. And I'll also say this, Mike, this is something I really like about Canada, is getting guys the ball out in space, because there's more space on the field. I like seeing guys out there in space making plays down the field. I think that's always awesome to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I just, you know, it's kind of sad that, you know, I know Frank talks about this at times, that people in Canada haven't really embraced the game, and, you know, especially in cities like Toronto and Vancouver, they sort of look down at it as kind of a minor league thing, which to a degree I can understand that, but I just felt like, you know, when you look at places like Saskatchewan and Winnipeg and you see the fan
mm-hmm.
support there, and especially, you know, in week one in Winnipeg with that beautiful stadium, you just, you know, I just see the potential for the CFL, and with this new TV deal, I think, you know, in 5 to 10 years, we could be looking at a league that will, I mean, never be at the same level as the NFL, but I think will be at a level that people can look at and, you know, respect and say, okay, this is a legitimate professional football league. So, you know, I don't know. I just want to throw that out there.
I think I agree with you 100%. And what I hope is that the third time around, that in Ottawa, people there embrace it like it's embraced in Winnipeg, like it's embraced, you know, in Regina, and that we had to add a market to the CFL that people are on fire for. You mentioned the tiny crowd at Guelph for the Hamilton game. I think this year's going to be a wash, you know.
Right.
Once they get their new stadium, I think we see Steeltown come back and support the Ticats. Let's hope that that's the case. And then, you know, and then maybe those cities, those communities supporting their teams like they always have, throwing Ottawa into that mix, maybe that puts a little more pressure on BC fans and Toronto fans to step their game up as well. And, you know, Montreal, I know it's a smaller stadium, but they always play in front of a packed house. But you're right about, you know, the two most cosmopolitan cities in Canada, so to speak, not really supporting their teams. I'd like to see Argo fans step up, no doubt, BC fans as well.
Well, we're trying to do our part with the Argo Lifers. I'm gonna dial out right now, guys. Don't worry, but I'm dialing one of our fans that's asking to be on, and then I also am gonna bring in a buddy of mine that I went to school with. Is it reaching? Let's see. Well, anyway, and we're gonna talk a little bit about boxing, MMA type stuff for the last.
Hello, good evening.
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
I'm good, Frankie boy. How's it going?
You got a question for our guest, Warren McCoy of ESPN?
Not quite, actually. It was I was listening to the show intermittently, but I just wanted to get on and tell you, man, what a great time I had 2 weeks ago, my first Argo game, well, my first official season game. It was a wonderful time, but a totally spectacular game. Ups and downs in first quarter, first half, losing and then coming back and pulling out and winning it. And just being a part of the Argo Lifer section and soaking in the whole environment, it was quite fantastic. Everything it was sold to be.
Yeah, gentlemen, Chris is one of the guys that I joined this group last year and became a season ticket holder with the Toronto Argonauts, and more importantly, a viewer of the CFL, because it isn't just about the Argos, because they can't go on the field by their lonesome. There needs to be another team on the field. So. It's been an enjoyable experience so far, and we brought Chris in this year. He's a new Argo fan, new CFL fan, and he's just relaying his first experience watching a football game live. How about you two? Mike, Warren, give me an indication of your first football game and that you saw in person, and give us a little synopsis of what you saw and what attracted you to the game. Mike, you first. Mike? I think Mike's left the building. Okay, Warren, I'll give you a shot.
Well, you know, of course, I shouldn't say in person, but I still remember the first game I ever watched, okay? I was 7 years old. It was Monday Night Football, the 1984 season, the Dallas Cowboys at the Miami Dolphins. Dallas loses 28-21. This is, of course, Dan Marino had a magical season, second year in the NFL, led his team to the Super Bowl. And for Dallas, it was kind of the beginning of the end of the Danny White era, and that team always making the playoffs and just not quite being able to get over the hump. But I remember that game vividly, and from then on I've been hooked. Now, in terms of Canada, the first CFL game I ever watched was, again, an ESPN tape delay broadcast, Hamilton and Saskatchewan. Hamilton with the striped goalposts, and it was raining, and I loved every minute of it. It was amazing, and Ray Elgard pushing off, and it was just a great experience, and I've been hooked on the CFL ever since as well. So those are probably the two most memorable games in terms of the first taste.
For me, the Ticats have probably one of the best uniforms in football.
Love them.
For me, although the boat logo is a close tie with that, and I have to say that because I need to be politically correct. That's an inside joke.
I love all the CFL logos and looks, the designs, except I'm not a big fan of the green Edmonton helmet, and I'm not a fan of Montreal
the new one.
Look at all. Or yeah, the new one.
That's awful.
It is awful. Like, what, you guys have that Green Bay Packer thing going, and you've had it forever. Well, don't screw that up. Yeah, so I can do without that. And then Montreal reminds me of the Buffalo Bills from about, I don't know, 5 years ago.
Oh, no.
Oh, you had to throw that in there, huh?
Oh, sorry. I mean, you know, it's like patchwork. You know, it's patchwork uniform. That's what it reminds me of. But otherwise, I love everybody else's look. I think it's great.
Now, is there something from your perspective that you see since Chris is here as a new fan, me relatively new live in the stadium, always been a fan of the CFL, but not as a season ticket holder. What is it about CFL fans that you notice that might be different or the same as NFL fans, Warren?
CFL fans, no, they are different. It is very much more so like a college atmosphere here in the States. For example, those weird damn people in Saskatchewan that wear the watermelons on their head, okay? That's the crazy stuff that you see at college games. Also, the blowhorns, the cowbells, the noisemakers that you'll hear at games in the CFL, you don't hear that in the NFL. You know, I cover the Broncos here in Denver. I'm at every home game. Of course, you know, I've scouted for years and have been to more games than I care to talk about. But crowd noise is huge because the stadiums are huge, right? But the atmosphere at a CFL game is very much more so ebb and flow, adrenaline, all that stuff that you get at a college atmosphere. So, and that's one thing I admire about CFL fans. They're so passionate that they'll wear a watermelon on their head and they'll bring a blowhorn and noisemakers to a game.
I'm the one with the blowhorn, so easy.
Hey, Warren,
sure.
Since having both a background in the NFL and CFL, I mean, I'm a newbie somewhat to the CFL, just being an Argos fan and just supporting all Toronto teams. How would you compare the two games? I mean, I grew up, as far as football exposure, on the Buffalo Bills, just from coming from a different country. My brother's been a supporter of the Bills. How would you combine the two different leagues? My perspective, and this is not hitting the CF at all, it's my perspective, a layman perspective beforehand, is that the CFL, the Canadian football game itself, was a lesser version, maybe not as hard-hitting. I've always seen it as a lesser bit, or the younger brother, so to speak, to the NFL. Do you think they have parity? How would you compare the two?
That's a great question.
Good evening.
think it's like...
No, don't worry about that. That's somebody else saying hello.
Yeah.
Well, Ricky, I'll call you in when it's time, okay?
Not a problem.
Okay.
Go ahead. I think you'd be comparing... It's almost like comparing a Ferrari and a sedan, right? both will get you from A to B. Both might take you 3 hours, but one looks way cooler than the other, depending on your perspective, right? If you're a father and you've got a daughter that's getting ready to go to college, okay, Ferrari doesn't look very damn cool. That sedan that's safe and is going to get great gas mileage, that's what looks cool, right?
That is, yeah.
So that's kind of the way I look at it. It totally depends on what you like. Now, if you like high-scoring, big plays, the football in the air, special teams playing a huge role, you get that in the CFL. Special teams, not as much in the NFL, especially now with the new rules, right, on kickoffs and such. So I think that's probably the best way to compare the two.
If the football thing isn't, I mean, when you finish your football career, so to speak, profession and politics will do you fine. That's a very creative and very safe answer, indeed.
Well, thanks. I'll keep that in mind.
Hey,
all
and
right,
Frank,
guys.
I just want to let you know.
Go ahead.
One quick thing. I'm bringing my daughter tomorrow to the game, so she's gonna be experiencing her first CFL game. So she's about 12, and she's gonna soak it all in. So I'm super stoked about that.
Awesome.
I can't wait to be there tomorrow as well.
Well, good, Chris. You know, we're all there to have fun. Warren, when I said to you that I'm part of a fan group, and this is, for the most part, a hobby of mine that I do for the benefit of the league and the team, I mean it sincerely. I really enjoy it, and I just want to pass the word along. And it's a major sacrifice on my part. I have to give up golf twice a month. But
ooh,
since I haven't played in about 4 or 5 years, it hasn't been that much of a sacrifice.
That's awesome. I admire what you guys are doing, and Chris, I think that's awesome. You're bringing your daughter to the game. I hope you guys have a great time. That's awesome.
Yes, for sure.
Okay, we're gonna switch gears right now. For those of you that are listening, you're listening to Candid Frank live streamed on Rouge Radio. I don't know if Jason Sperling's gonna like this, but we're going to talk about boxing and how boxing is used as a learning tool in football. And also because a friend of mine has an event that's coming up. His name is Richard Lewis. He's an Olympic athlete, a boxer. We went to school together, a proud friend of mine, and he has an event coming up in August, I believe August 10th, and it's at the Powerade Center in Brampton. And there's a whole bunch of stuff going on. There'll be, of course, to start with, there'll be amateur bouts. And then after the amateur bouts, there'll be a car show. They're raffling off a BMW. And then later on at night at about 7 p.m., there'll be a minimum of 5 pro fights. Richard, when you were a kid, I called you Ricky. I have to call you Richard now because you're a businessman. Is that what it is?
Are you kidding? Mr. Stanisi, you can call me Ricky anytime, buddy.
Ricky is a boxer, and he's a trainer as well. He's had the good fortune of training Pinball Wizard himself, Pinball the Wizard, the president, I guess, of the Argos now, or he has some sort of title, I guess, and he's the main mouthpiece for the political side of the Toronto Argonauts, Pinball Clemens. Richard, I got a guy here who believes wholeheartedly that in training quarterbacks, the footsteps that are taken by a quarterback are the same as a boxer. Do you find that hard to believe?
Well, actually, I find that remarkably accurate. Just the intricacy, the little subtle foot movements and everything that gets those quarterbacks out of the way of those flying defensive guys who are trying to take them out is a lot similar to boxers and those little slight movements they make just to change angles, just to make sure that they miss things too. So there is a great similarity.
Warren?
And I also find the one thing that makes me laugh about the two sports and how similar and how much they benefit each other. I don't know if you remember a football player by the name of Ed Too Tall Jones, who's played for the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, yeah.
He interrupted his football career to have a boxing career. Now, it didn't last too long in the boxing aspect of it, but he was there for a good 2 years, and you know, because of his status in football, he immediately made it into the limelight, and people got to see him. But he didn't fare too well, so he went back to football, went back as an older gentleman, and had a better second-half career than his first half. And he was outstanding in his first half. He was just extremely outstanding in the second half, and he attributed a lot of that to all the conditioning and the different training and stuff he went through in boxing, and how it was much easier for him to get to those quarterbacks again.
I have a suspicion, I have an opinion on why he didn't make it as a boxer.
Go ahead, shoot. You're usually an intuitive guy.
Thank you. He was too tall.
Well, there's a couple of Klitschko's that would argue with that.
Ba-da-bum-bum. Ba-da-bum-bum. Okay. Warren, you do train quarterbacks, and you do, you know, you do believe in boxing steps, if you will, being a good way to train quarterbacks.
It's literally some of the first sessions I do with guys is being light on their feet, light on their toes, movement, moving in a, you know, circle, shadowing, all those things, weight transfer when they're throwing the football. A lot of guys who play baseball and then also play football and want to play quarterback have this tendency to take this big step before they throw like an outfielder, right, in baseball. It's not a big step in football. It's a 4 to 6 inches maximum step, and that's about the same that a boxer is going to take when he's delivering a straight right. And we work on jabs, and I take mitts out there, and we work on calf raises and jumping rope and being extremely strong in our calves through down to our Achilles, which is the same as a boxer, being light on their feet, having strong legs, just like the gentleman said, being able to escape pressure with subtle movements in the pocket. It's all footwork, and it's the same for a boxer, exactly like he was saying, being able to avoid a punch, find different angles to deliver a punch, all those things, including weight transfer, they're all the same for a quarterback. Now,
and it's
I think you need a coach, though. Not every quarterback coach teaches it that way, but if you really look at the principles, it's boxing 101. It's boxing 101, and that's the way I teach my guys.
Go ahead, Ricky. You were trying to say something.
Well, I think that is extremely accurate, and especially because in football you need the subtleness like you were talking about and the explosive power, and you don't have to take that huge step. You're right. That's weight transfer, that's shifting, and boxers have to do that. We don't have that opportunity to take those big steps. It'll take us out of range of somebody, out of sync, out of that alignment to really land a punch and to be effective. So much as a quarterback, you know, that a quick release, a quick shift, that quick pivot, and explosiveness is going to make sure that ball does travel the 60 yards it needs to go. You know, I think that's brilliant. And, you know, they both go hand in hand.
Richard, we were talking about earlier, and I don't blame you if you didn't hear it. Warren and I were talking about the dedication that football players have to their work regimen, that they work very hard. You've had a chance to train the odd football player. Is that true, and does it show in when you're training with them or helping them to recover from injuries?
Well, just last year I was dealing with, unfortunately right now I can't remember his name. I think it was Cottrell. He was a defensive lineman for the Buffalo Bills, and he got injured. Had to go back and go through some rehab. Originally, he's from out our side of the border. He's from Montreal. So we got a chance to work with him and everything. And when he came to the gym, his work ethics, from me to putting him through the routines that were totally foreign for him, but were really beneficial for, like you said, weight transfer, explosiveness, everything that he needed to get back onto that football stage. And this guy came in, he was a 260 3-pound guy, and the thing that impressed me most about him was the speed factor. And I figured, I always watch football on TV, it's like, I could play that, but if I seen this guy coming down the field at me, I just hand him the ball. that's a whole different ball game there.
Well, they equalize things in boxing. In boxing, they don't make you fight outside your class. Unless there's a lot of money involved. Unless there's a lot of money involved. So Ricky, tell us about the event that you're having. I know it's happening at the Powerade Center. What can you tell us about it?
Well, it's all day event. We're starting off with a live amateur boxing show. After the boxing show, we've got things going on, like the Ontario Boxing Hall of Fame induction is going on. We have 20 specialty booths set up around the arena and 20 different booths set up outside because we have a car show going on also. And that takes place from 3 to 7 p.m. And at 7 p.m., the doors open up. At 8 p.m., we start the pro fights, and they are going to be exciting. We've got some really good pro fights lined up. And to make things even more exciting, we're raffling off a 2001 four-door black BMW. And when a person gets it, they don't have to worry about nothing. It'll be fully certified. All you have to do is transfer it over into your name and drive out of the parking lot.
Wow. Well, that sounds like a good deal. Ricky, you know I'll be there. I'll see. If you need me to sell popcorn or check tickets, I'll be there for you, buddy.
You may be working a corner, buddy.
Oh, no way. No. Listen. The broadcast days, I remember the broadcast days. Warren, have you ever done kickboxing?
I've done MMA and I've done boxing. I've never done kickboxing.
Okay. I did kickboxing, and my wife's going, oh, no. I came home after a kickboxing, and of course we were sitting right beside the ring doing our thing. I was doing the play by play of the kickboxing, and I get home and my wife goes, "What the heck did you do to your shirt? What'd you spill? Ketchup on it or something?" I said, "Ketchup. I didn't have nothing." Ketchup. There was blood all over my shirt. My wife just was totally, don't go do any of that stuff ever again. It's horrible. I can't get the blood out of your shirts. And I'm sitting there going,
that's the excitement of those ringside seats, too.
No kidding. And I was introduced to it. I'll tell you, MMA, boxing, I really admire those athletes. Richard, boxing is how many events, let's say, happen here in the metro area, that like the one you're talking about on August 10th? How many of those happen?
Well, in a year, unfortunately, we don't really get that many out here. In a year, we'll probably have maybe 6. Like last year, we had 7 events in Ontario. I'm not just in the metro area. I'm talking about in Ontario. It's not for the lack of effort. Sometimes, it's a little harder to get athletes to come out here and to come up here, and with the Canadian dollar being different and all those kind of things. But in the last little while, things are starting to pick up. And with the MMA scene picking up, also the boxing scene has picked up out here. So, the fighters out here and the transfer over from boxing to MMA, just like from karate or Brazilian jiu-jitsu into that MMA field, all those fighters who will now have the one skill set are running around and picking up those other skill sets because it'll allow them to go and compete in MMA. So that a lot of activity, a lot of gyms. I'm connected with a gym called Elite Martial Arts, and it's in Mississauga, and it's run by a UFC fighter named Claude Patrick. So, a lot of great places out here to train, and we produce a very high caliber athlete when it comes to boxing and mixed martial arts.
Ricky, it was really nice catching up with you again. We'll have to follow up again another time. It's really been a pleasure, buddy.
Frank, as always, it's always my pleasure. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Okay, Warren, we're winding down. We've almost completed 2 hours. Let's talk about your other...
It's flown by.
Has it? Good. I'm glad.
Yeah.
I'm glad. Let's talk... I don't... Now, as much as you know about hockey, I know about MMA. So I won't throw...
Okay.
I won't throw you under the bus. Don't throw me under the bus. Tell me about, from your perspective, the MMA. Here in Toronto, it's very big. Rogers Cable went nuts, you know, trying to change the rules here in Ontario to get UFC brought into Toronto. They've a new station. They call it Rogers Sportsnet 360. Used to be a different station, and now it's strictly an MMA station. It pretty much is an MMA station. What is it about MMA that's so fascinating for people, other than the obvious that it's extremely violent?
Well, there is that obvious. It's extremely violent. I think what you also get is, and I don't want to be crude or disrespectful to the sweet science, because I grew up watching boxing, okay? But our world, not only here in the States, but in Canada as well, we live a faster-paced lifestyle, right? We have the internet, we have our cell phones, we're going to meetings, we're watching stuff. Our attention spans are much shorter as society. So the beautiful thing about mixed martial arts is you don't see a 12-round boxing fight. In that same period of time, you might watch three MMA fights. The chances of seeing somebody get knocked out are great. And I think you also get that you have so many different genres, because so many people here in the States, at least, guys, wrestle in high school. Some wrestle in college, but then there was no outlet for them after wrestling, right? And then you've got boxers, and you've got kickboxers, and then you've got grapplers. You've got all these different styles, and it comes together, and it answers that age-old question: could a wrestler beat a boxer? Could a boxer beat a wrestler? Could a wrestler take on a kick fighter? You know. So you've got that mixture as well. So it's unique in that regard, and it's a little faster paced.
It's you know, like I said, I'm not an expert with MMA, but from an outside observer, it seemed like the natural progression from the tough guy contest.
Yep.
You know, because it was basically no holds barred, right?
Right. Back in the day, it was for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it looks like to me, and I'm old enough to remember that part. And basically where bouncers had it out, it was basically who is the best bouncer, you know, type thing. And now it's progressed into this MMA thing. Now, as much as you referred to, you know, to boxing as the sweet science, you know, I think the MMA has become, I'm trying to figure out a term for it. It's become the science of submission. It's not as important to knock somebody out in the MMA. You have that outlet where submitting is part of the program. So a guy can, without, you know, like you don't, like in boxing, throwing in the white towel is a really bad thing. You know what I mean? Like, whereas submission is not a crime in the MMA, which gives an outlet for less injury. And some people may find it hard to believe, but there are less injuries in MMA than there are in boxing.
Absolutely.
Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. Well, and also, I'm sure it's the same in Canada, here in the States, due to football, due to the big lawsuits, concussion awareness is at a very high point in terms of our everyday consciousness. It's discussed about, it's talked about daily, right, by some of the biggest names in sport. So, like you said, yes, those are 4-ounce gloves. Yes, we see dudes get knocked out. But you also see guys get submitted, and they'll tap out rather than get their arm broken. And the fights are shorter. There's a lot less pounding on the brain. So I think a lot of people look at MMA as a safer sport than boxing, because you don't have that consistent brain trauma. Yeah, you might get knocked out, but you didn't get hit 70 times in the head during your fight. You might have gotten hit 3 times and got knocked out. And I think there's the concern that the same thing with football, the constant hitting of the head, that's what you get in boxing. So, yeah, there's definitely a sentiment amongst parents and young people that if you're going to be in combat sports, MMA is definitely the way to go versus boxing.
And also the definition of a body blow in boxing is totally different than the MMA.
Yes,
I mean,
it is.
Your foot can be a target in MMA. So,
absolutely,
you know,
it can. Sure.
So you know, causing a person to submit isn't just about pounding him in the stomach or in the, you know, in the abdomen so that you can expose his head. In this case, you're not using it to go to the head. You're just using it to win the match, which I think is the finer point of why the MMA is a lot safer than boxing, and maybe that's why it's so attractive, not only for the people to watch, but the people, as you say, to participate in the sport.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, the training is grueling either way, whether you're talking boxing or MMA. But in terms of what you put your body through, yeah, I think it is safer.
Now,
and I say that being a boxing fan. I like boxing. I prefer boxing to MMA, but that's just the truth of the matter.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I love Ricky like a brother, but I'm not a big fan of MMA or boxing. I find the sports, maybe it's because I live with four daughters and a wife, so I've you know, my estrogen level's a little higher than maybe it should be. So possibly maybe I don't have, you know, the support around me to talk about it. You know, it gets snuffed out right away. Mm-hmm. Like, my wife can tell when I'm switching to that channel. And
sure.
Somehow it disappears before it even gets on the screen.
That's awesome.
So, you know, I also never lift the toilet seat, and I don't stand up either. So you know, I've been trained well in this home. I love boxing. I covered it for years. Kickboxing I found very attractive.
Sure.
But you know, I've been sort of subtly brainwashed into not enjoying it as much as I used to. Now, for someone. Now, we've talked about your football, your MMA. What other interests do you have? Because I have a feeling that you might have other interests that might be interesting to talk about in the last couple of minutes that we have here. Anything you want to share with us?
Well, yeah, I do the quarterback training. I put on camps and clinics, not only to help high school football players here in the States get better, but also to help them get to college. So that occupies a lot of time. And you know what, Frank? I'm married with five kids, three girls and two boys, and they keep me busy as well. So pretty much every hour of my day is occupied. So not a whole lot of downtime. Yeah.
Us about, in the final 2 minutes, how can our listeners find you
sure.
and listen to what you have to offer? Because you have a lot of great things to offer. And I don't want to surprise anybody, but if you listen to his program, he actually talks to CFL people, including Mr. Cohan, and also talks about the CFL in general. And he really is a promoter of the CFL, and I have to tell you, folks, that's why he was invited on here. So give us an idea how to find you and how to listen to you.
Sure. Best way for folks up north to check it out is to go to www.ESPN1580.com, so ESPN1580.com. You can listen to the streaming live button. And we also have an iPhone and Android app for cell phone users who want to listen online as well. And I'm on 12 to 3 Mountain, which for folks in the Toronto neck of the woods would be 2 to 5 Eastern, and that's Monday through Friday, weekdays. And it's interactive. I take phone calls, text, emails, et cetera. And if you're having any issues with the ESPN site, you can also go to my personal site, which is mypassionisfootball.com, and you can listen live to the show there as well.
Now, the site that you have, My Passion is Football, what's on that site that people may find interesting?
My camps and clinics, upcoming events, and then once the football season starts here in the States, you know, I'll have a daily column that I write about, you know, various issues relating to football. So a lot of good interaction there as well, and information on training and recruiting and, you know, just a variety of things.
And if you had one passing thought to leave us with, in as far as Canadian Football League, Canadian fans, one final comment, advice or opinion or, you know, for us Canadian Football League fans and those of us that live in Canada.
Don't take the CFL for granted. Tell your friends about it. Talk to people who may not appreciate it. Get them to watch the game right now because it's some of the best CFL football that's ever been played. I love it, and I want people to continue to spread the gospel of CFL because it's a great time to be a fan of the CFL right now. And for folks who can do that, to be able to tell their friends about it would be great.
The one thing I love about this show, Warren, is I get to make new friends all the time and people I feel an affinity with, and I really do feel an affinity with you, and I truly appreciate the time we've had together yesterday and today, and thank you for sharing a lot of your thoughts, and you are very supportive of our league, and I am grateful for that. Thank you, sir.
Likewise, Frank. It's a pleasure talking to you, and look forward to doing it again.
Well, I'll have to call you on your show, but
yes,
it won't be
absolutely.
For 2 hours. But it
absolutely.
Won't be for 2 hours.
We can do it.
You got it, buddy. You got it.
Take care, Frank. All right.
You too,
talk
man.
To you soon.
Yes, sir. Okay, Warren McCoy, ESPN Radio 1580. He works out of Colorado. Coach, does all of it. You're listening to Candid Frank Live on Blog Talk Radio, streamed on Rouge Radio. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you again on Friday and Monday, Wednesday, and Friday again and again and again. Thanks for tuning in.